Good morning. We have three lessons today, and the one that I'm not going to talk about is the one you know best, which is Psalm 23, which is written by a shepherd, you may have guessed, and that shepherd was David. But we are going to talk about the calling of David in that first lesson from 1 Samuel. So when we start the lesson from 1 Samuel, notice the prophet Samuel, what is he doing? He is mourning King Saul, which is odd because King Saul is not dead. King Saul will live on for at least another decade, maybe two, as king. So we need to back up a bit and see what the context is for these verses. When we start the book of 1 Samuel, there is no king in Israel. When they need extra leadership, God will appoint a judge like Deborah or Gideon or Samson or Samuel, the prophet. But the people say, we don't like this. God is our king, and having these judges, we want a king like everybody else has. We want to be like everybody else. And so God relents and has Samuel appoint Saul as king. And Saul looked like a king. Saul, they said, was about a head taller than everybody else. And we may laugh and say that that's not what makes a good king, but even to this day, studies say that we are more likely to make someone a manager, a CEO, or even a president if they're tall. So, but the problem with Saul is at the point of our story, Saul has been disobedient to God, and God has rejected him. And Samuel, who was on Team Saul, Samuel was hoping Saul would be successful, is mourning Saul. And God says, enough. Enough, it's time to move on. I'm going to send you to Jesse's house, and you're going to name one of his sons to be king in Saul's place. And Samuel points out, we have a king right now. This is going to get awkward. And God says, take a heifer, you're going to go make a sacrifice, and you're going to invite them to the sacrifice. Everything's going to be okay. So he goes to Jesse's house. Jesse lines up his sons in order of importance, oldest to youngest, because this is a big deal when the prophet of God is visiting your house and visiting your town. And Samuel looks at the oldest of Jesse's sons and says, this guy looks like a king. Notice anything wrong with that? The guy we've got looked like a king. That was not the problem. What God says to Samuel is, I see things differently than you do. Don't look on his appearance. He doesn't have the heart, is his problem. He doesn't have what we would say is a servant's heart. He doesn't have the heart to be the leader of God's people. It's not him. And then we play a game of, well, what about that guy? Well, what about that guy? What about that guy? And we go down the line of seven sons, and God rejects every single one. And so now they're standing there, and Jesse is standing with seven sons all rejected, and Samuel has to ask the awkward question, got any more sons? They say, well, yeah, there's one more, the youngest, but to be frank, they didn't think he was important enough to be here when the prophet of God came to town. They left him in the field with the sheep. Call for him. And so he comes, and Samuel sees him, and he's a good-looking kid, a little sunburned, says ruddy, red in complexion, handsome, doesn't look like a king. He looks like a shepherd boy, because that's what he is. And God says, that's the guy. That's the one I'm calling. And Samuel anoints David as king. This is the calling story of King David. Now, our gospel lesson today also has another example of God seeing people differently than people see people. And in this case, the people who don't look at people the correct way, the way that God would, are the disciples. They're walking down through Jerusalem, and they see a man who is not just blind, but he was born blind. And they know, without a shadow of a doubt, because of what they've been taught by the religious leaders at the time, that if this man was born blind, someone really screwed up. Someone sinned. Their only question is, was it this man or was it his parents? And Jesus says, no, it wasn't either one. It was that the work of God could be shown in him. And he calls the man over who hasn't asked for anything, who has probably never woken up a day in his life and thought, I wonder if I'm going to be the first person I've ever heard of born blind who gains his sight. But Jesus calls him over and he does something a little weird and something a little gross. He spits on the ground, he makes some mud, and he puts it on the man's eyes, and he says, go to the pool of Siloam, the pool that means literally sent. The man goes, he washes, and he can see. Now, everyone at the time understood that this was a miracle, but they didn't even understand how big a miracle it was, which we get a little more. So Jesus, somehow with that mud or with that journey to the Pool of Siloam, not only fixed whatever was wrong with the man's ocular system, his eyes, his retina, his whatever was wrong there, but because this man has never, ever, ever seen, he would have to create in him a vision system in his brain. He rewired his brain somehow between wherever he was and the Pool of Siloam. Pretty big deal. Now, we know where the Pool of Siloam is. Archaeologists have found it. If you go to Jerusalem, then if you go just outside of what is now the old walls of Jerusalem, which are not the walls from Jesus' time, and you go just a little south of the city of David, which is outside those walls, you can find the Pool of Siloam. It is connected to a spring via a tunnel built by King Hezekiah, mentioned in the Old Testament, Hezekiah's tunnel that he built when the Assyrians were besieging the city. So we know where the man was sent to. We don't know where he was sent from. But Jesus spent a lot of time going from Bethany, the other side of the Mount of Olives, up to the Temple Mount. And so probably they were along that road over there. And Jesus sent this man across Jerusalem to get to this pool. We don't know why. It is convenient that the pool is named Sent. I don't know if that's why he sent him there. But he sent him, the man had to get across the city with no white cane, no guide dog. Those haven't been invented yet. So he is either stumbling across town or asking for help from strangers or friends or however. He finally gets to the pool. He washes this gunk off his face, and he turns to Jesus and, no, wait, sorry. Jesus isn't there. When the man is healed, he doesn't know where Jesus is. Right? He's cross town. This is an interesting story because Pastor Ben wanted to be really kind to our lectors today, and so we have 12 verses of the story that John tells. John tells it in 41 verses. And it's like watching one of your favorite episodes of your drama that you'll watch, but it's that guest episode where the main character is there for 2 minutes at the beginning and 2 minutes at the end, and the whole middle part of it is all guest stars. That's the way John tells this story. The whole middle part of this story is people going, is that the man born blind? I don't think that's the man born blind. This guy clearly sees. No, I'm the man born blind. Well, what happened? Well, Jesus spit on the ground. He made some mud. He put it on my eyes. He sent me to the Pool of Siloam. I went, I washed, and now I see. He said, well, where is Jesus? He says, I don't know. I have literally never seen the guy. Well, the Jewish leaders call him in because, of course, Jesus did this on the Sabbath, which is a lot of the tension between him and the Jewish leaders. Now, just to be clear, Jesus is allowed to spit on the ground. But as soon as he mixed it up and made mud, he was irrigating. I kid you not. They would see that as a violation of the Sabbath, whether or not the guy actually was healed. And so they call this guy in and they say, what happened? He says, Jesus spit on the ground, he made some mud, he put it on my eyes, he sent me to the pool of Siloam, I went, I washed, and now I see. They have a little trouble with this story. They've never heard of anybody being born blind who can see again, so they call his parents in. And they say, is this your son? They say, yes, he is our son. Was he born blind? He was born blind. What happened? Well, they dodge that question because they have heard that if they give credit to Jesus, they're going to get kicked out of the synagogue. So they say, well, he's an adult. Why don't you ask him? So they turn to him and they say, give glory to God, because we know this man, Jesus, is a sinner. And he says, I don't know about that. What I know is, Jesus spit on the ground, he made some mud, he put it on my eyes, he sent me to the pool of Siloam, I went, I washed, and now I see. They say, we don't even know what this guy comes from. And he says, well, that's interesting. Because we've never heard of anybody being born blind who can see. As a man born blind, that is probably something that he was well aware of. He said he could only do this if God was with him. He is now up at the line, about to cross it here. And they say again, well, what happened? He's like, okay, I have told you this story. Why do you want to hear it again? Do you also want to become his disciple? They don't take that well. They say, how dare you try and teach us? You are clearly a sinner because you are blind-ish, was, used to be. And they kick him out of the synagogue. And this is the point where Jesus re-enters the story in John's account, that last 2 minutes of the episode. And Jesus hears the man has been kicked out of the synagogue and tracks him down and says, do you believe in the Son of Man? He says, I don't know. I don't know who that is. And he says, it is I. And the man says, Lord, I believe. This story, like the story of David, isn't just a healing story. This is a calling story. This man has become, as he told the religious leaders, a disciple of Jesus. And then Jesus says, I have come so that those who are blind can see, and those who see may be made blind. And the Pharisees understand that he is talking about them, and they are none too happy. But they were blind to the situation, as were the disciples, as was Samuel when he's looking at the, you know, tall, good-looking son and saying, this guy looks like a king. They weren't seeing the situation the way God sees the situation. And lest we pick on them, we sometimes have the same problem. When we're choosing leaders, we sometimes choose people who we think look like leaders to be a manager or a CEO or even a president, and we don't pay attention to their heart. We don't see as God sees. And when we're walking down the street and we see someone, sometimes we are sure, we are convinced that we know their story, how it started and how it will end. and we fail to see the child of God loved by God and called to be a disciple. So I pray that this week we would see the world with the eyes of God. See those, the hearts of those around us, and see those who are called and loved by God, not limited to, but including us. Amen.